Barbara Heinzen is a long-term strategist and scenario planner with a 30-year practice working with corporations, government departments, and civil society organizations in Asia, Africa, Latin America, Europe, and the United States. In recent years, she has been working on two multi-stakeholder projects concerning the future of energy, one in East Africa and the other in Pennsylvania, USA. Barbara is also a volunteer environmental activist and advocate in the community and owns 20 acres of land along the Hudson River on the boundary of town of Queemans and New Baltimore. Barbara joins us back on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine now to talk about the town of Queemans Clean Air Bill. Welcome back, Barbara.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Barbara, you've been on our show before. Can you give us a quick rundown of Local Law Number 1, Clean Air Bill, and why it's important?
Yeah, I think the last time I was here, I was talking about how it came about. Because there was in late 2017, the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection had a proposal to send all the municipal waste from Hartford to the Lafarge plant in Queemans for burning. And they didn't tell the town of Queemans, they didn't tell Albany County, they just were quietly making their plans. And it was one of three proposals, but we heard about it just before Christmas in 2017, and a hasty news conference had the room packed in the Queemans Town Hall. That persuaded Connecticut that maybe they would not accept that proposal of the three they had before them. And they had to make a decision before the end of 2017. So our news conference was 2 days after Christmas, and by the end of the year, the proposal had died. So that was very fortunate for us.
The local law will be voted on at this Thursday's town board meeting. How would you recommend listeners who are in support of this bill get involved?
Yeah, the law came about because the person who had alerted us to this threat from Connecticut then helped the town of Queemans to write a clean air law. And that was had a public hearing last August, and then it was put up for a vote in December. There were various delays put in the way by the Lafarge company that said, well, surely it's okay to burn tires. You know, okay, we won't burn garbage, but we can burn tires. And now, after going through every possible delay and giving Lafarge as much time as possible to get their point of view across, the town has said, enough, we're going to vote on Thursday. So if you're in the neighborhood, please come along at 7 o'clock to the Queemans Town Hall at 18 Russell Avenue in Ravenna, or write to Phil Crandall at pcrandall@queemans.org and say, we support the clean air law, please pass it.
And so specifically, what would this law legislate around? Would it be a complete ban on any municipal waste burning for the purposes of energy?
It's not a complete ban. It was a little bit subtler than that because it said you can burn solid waste, municipal waste, tires, other kinds of waste, but no more than 25 tons a day, which sounds like a lot to you and me, but if you're trying to fire your cement plant, it's not enough to make a significant difference. And if you do decide to burn up to 25 tons a day, you then have to monitor the pollutants that are coming out of your smokestack on a continuous basis. And not just the four that the EPA and DEC are always asking us to monitor, but about 19 different pollutants, including dioxins and furans and other things that are not considered very safe for human life or for the environment in general. So you have whoever wants to burn waste has to monitor on a daily basis and publish their results on a regular basis online where everybody can see them in real time.
Could you speak to the kind of health risks that we would face if these contaminants and pollutants were not monitored?
That's a very good question. And when I've tried to look for the studies of burning garbage in various places, we have very few good studies that I've found on a quick search in the U.S. Most of the studies have been in places like India and other countries outside the U.S. There seems to be a higher risk of cancer There's higher risk of respiratory diseases. One of my neighbors, whose house has been downstream of the downwind of the cement plant, was telling me yesterday that they had 4 or 5 cases of cancer in his street alone, including his son, who died of cancer before he left high school. So what I would love to see a proper epidemiological study in our neighborhood and in the downwind area of the cement plant and other places that are incinerating garbage, but they have not been done in our neck of the woods so far as I know.
So what about other towns and villages in this region? Are any of other municipalities struggling with similar types of environmental issues?
Yeah. There's a proposal to burn incinerate garbage in Glen Falls, and that's to the north of us, and that's something that people are trying to oppose. There's also a huge issue around the dump in Rensselaer that was approved, and there's some developments on that that I don't think it's incineration, but it's the management of garbage in an unsafe way, let's put it that way. Hmm. There's also a request in Catskill to put fly ash from cement plants in an old quarry very close to the Hudson River. And fly ash is something that actually has a lot of toxins in it, so we don't particularly want that to go forward either. The difficulty with all of this is that where all these activist protests are closing off incineration, are closing off some of these options that we've been used to having, and we still have mountains of garbage. So there's a very big issue that we don't know how to face in this region, and I would say we don't know how to face in the country. What are we going to do with the garbage we're producing?
And what are some proposals that you may have heard, or what would be done if no direct action other than these laws was passed?
If there's no direction law against incineration, well, the incineration would go ahead. There would be limited monitoring of 3 or 4 of the pollutants, but it would go ahead. With the direct action, and if incineration is stopped, then you'll see more rubbish going into landfills. And we also have protests over expanding the landfill in the Albany Pine Bush, for example. In Queemans, we had a very big fight over taking a very large area of wetlands and turning that into a dump for the city of Albany. That was defeated. So we're running out of landfill that people are willing to have as landfill. The option of incineration is being closed off. So what do we do about the garbage that our society produces? One possibility is, well, let's not produce so much garbage. You know, how do you just not create the amount of packaging? Or how do you create packaging that can be composted rather than burnt? So that's one option. How do you do that? With something like tires, how do you reuse them in a safe way? How do you grind them up, and can you then use them for paving or for other kinds of uses rather than burning it? When you burn it, you're moving the pollution from a landfill to the air. So you're still having the pollution. It's just a case of where it's going.
Yeah. And eventually it falls down everywhere else.
Yeah. And to make the reuse of tires successful, you actually have to redesign the tire so that it doesn't contain quite as complex a mixture of components and of chemicals and minerals that can then produce the sorts of toxins we don't want to see in our environment. So what we're facing is the possibility that we need to really redesign the way we produce goods, the way we package them, the way we dispose of things. And it's a much bigger systemic change than we're really prepared to take on just yet, I think.
So these local actions from grassroots activists and people who are directly impacted, so to speak, on the ground, mm-hmm. seem to be quite effective at times in diverting public policy in a way that can at least ameliorate the immediate condition. But I think the point that you're bringing up is that these are system, like architecture design issues with our global economy and marketplace and general society at scale.
Even something like banning plastic bags, single-use plastic bags. That's one way to reduce garbage right away. Using compostable packaging is another way to reduce garbage, because if it can be turned into good soil material, you can put it into a composting system that then becomes much more usable without a lot of environmental impact. So you're looking at a very basic redesign of the way we develop and circulate the products that we like to buy and use. There's also a very important factor is that China has stopped taking a lot of the recycling that we were producing. And one of the reasons they stopped taking it was that it was very contaminated. We weren't very good about separating what can be recycled from what cannot be recycled. So they said, we're tired of this rubbish that you're sending us. You know, we can't spend all our time sorting out your rubbish. You know, can you at least send us uncontaminated garbage that we can recycle in our petrochemical plants or wherever else it is? So that means that we have to maybe be inconvenienced in our households and start sorting our trash a lot more conscientiously than we have been up until now.
Yeah, it sounds as if we need to essentially have some level of compulsory recycling with guidelines and potentially even, I don't know, work that into like elementary school education in terms of how, you know, to properly rinse out a peanut butter container so that it can be properly recycled or what have you.
All of that's true. I also read something recently that said by putting a fee on every bag of garbage you put out on your front step, that reduced the amount of garbage that was produced every week dramatically.
Mm. Well, we have a local councilwoman. I don't know if you heard the headlines earlier. Mm. That is actually we have a fee in Troy for the homeowners.
Well done.
There's already resistance against it, and I understand as somebody who doesn't like to pay for things why people are resistant to it. But I think the problems that you're bringing up here are very worth engaging with on a both local level as well as a much more large scale level.
Yeah, I think also when you're faced with people's likely resistance to these things, you have to think carefully about how does something get introduced? Who's consulted? What's the nature of the consultation? How well do people understand the choices that our policymakers are facing? We sort of expect them to solve the problem for us. And then when they present us with a solution, we say, but that's not the one we wanted. So we're being unreasonable in what we expect of policymakers. So what is the political process where people are actually given the choices, given some idea of, well, would you rather have this or would you rather have that? Mm-hmm. And we're not often being asked to make judgments. We're just being asked to comment or complain
or comply.
So we have to be realistic as well with ourselves about what we're asking of our policymakers.
Do you happen to have any idea of what is happening to the recycling that is being rejected by China?
So
as far as I understand, they keep picking it up at my curb. So I've been recently personally interested in knowing where it's going and what's happening to it.
That's a very good question. I have no idea where it's going. I have read that some of it is going to countries that are more willing to take it. So instead of it going to China, it's now going to Thailand, Vietnam,
Bangladesh,
Cambodia, places that have less strict control over their management of imported waste. Mm. I've also read articles about recycling electronic waste in Kenya, where you'll get a little shack someplace near the Mombasa port, where somebody's just taking these things apart, his workers are exposed to all sorts of chemicals without any protection at all. There's all sorts of leakage of things that nobody is looking at. So you get a poorer standard of environmental care when you just ship it to a country that doesn't have the standards that we do. So we put it overseas and say we've solved our problem. We haven't solved it. We've just given it to somebody else who might not be as equipped to handle it.
Yeah, essentially what I'm taking away from this is the importance of recognizing that there's no out when people say, oh, I threw it out. Really, there's just a there.
There's no out. You're right. It's a good way to put it. It stays in the system somewhere.
Well, thank you very much, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
You're very welcome.
Is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners who may want to further get involved in either this action or in actions similar?
There's a number of issues in Queemans right now, and we have a very important election coming up. One of the other businesses that was very much in favor of burning tires has put up a slate of candidates to run for the town board. And I think anybody who's interested in local politics in Queemans should look very carefully at what those connections are between those candidates and the existing business interests in Queemans.
Well, thank you for that advisement and for your very careful verbiage there.
You're most welcome.
We encourage all of our listeners to engage in their civic duties and to be as informed as possible when voting is on the line.
Definitely.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
And that was Barbara Heinzen, environmental activist from New Baltimore, New York, speaking to us today about the town of Queemans, local law number 1 clean air bill. Listeners who want to join with Barbara and the community in support of this bill can attend the Queemans Town Board meeting at 7 p.m. this Thursday, March 14th. The meeting will be held at 18 Russell Avenue in Ravenna, New York, and you can email fellow activist Christine Primomo at christineprimomo2@gmail.com for more information. That's christineprimomo2@gmail.com.